Welcome to Novelist Spotlight, the podcast where published fiction writers are interviewed to gather their insights and writing lessons so we can use them to make ourselves better and more effective writers. There are just three things I ask of you, if appropriate to you and your experience. Please subscribe, please click on the like button, and please share this program link with any family members, friends, or colleagues who might be interested or benefit from the content. Now, on with our program. If you read the biographical information, that little bit of biographical information I include in the program notes, you'll see that I've written four novels. I'm working, actually it's three novels in a short story collection, and then I'm working on a fifth book. But I've only self-published one. I've gone out there with each of them trying to get it published the traditional route. You know how difficult that is. At any rate, that first book, Hardwood, is regarded as a sports book. It's not really. But you can't really take time to tell an agent that, because you write the letter, and if they say, I don't represent sports books, you'll have to find somebody else. I wouldn't even know what to do with this. You don't have time to say, well, wait a minute, it's really not a sports book. It's sports is just the canvas. I never even intended to ever write a sports book, even though I'm a big sports fan. But this one just made itself apparent to me, and I went ahead and wrote it. It came easier, I think, probably than anything I've ever written. But I put it out there to the agents. I did get an agent interested. He was really interested, and he said, promise me you won't take an offer from anybody else without calling me first. And I said, you got it, no problem. Well, he said, send me the rest of the book. He read the first 50 pages. By the time I sent him the rest of the book and he got to the end, which was an open ending, which is how I like that in a book. I don't necessarily feel like it needs to be a hard ending, because otherwise, what do you have to think about or talk about afterward? So when I sent him the full manuscript, he reads it and then says, I wish I had better news, but I didn't really care for the ending and yada, yada. And of course, what does that tell you? It tells you that if he's not saying, let's work together and rewrite this a little bit, I'd like a different ending, here's what I'm looking for. It means that he's run into a bunch of other material that he really wants to work with more than mine. So I get that. I can read the subtext. So I decided I'll self-publish it. And you know what that's all about. You get it out there, and then, there's the big effort to try to market it. And that's a big one. So I've refrained from doing that, thinking that my other books, I think maybe I can get it published the traditional route. Well, I'm going to go that self-published route again with the second one I wrote, which is called Family Recipes, and subtitled A Novel About Italian Culture, Catholic Guilt, and the Culinary Crime of the Century. And that's another one where I actually did get an agent who represented me for a while. She took it out there to a bunch of different editors that she thought were appropriate for it, and nothing ever actually happened with that. She couldn't get it sold, and she said, I tried, couldn't get it done, and take it back, and you need to work with somebody else. So that one, which is probably the most marketable thing I've written, is the one I'm going to self-publish next. So this is a heads up. This is I'm excited about doing the self-publishing thing with this particular book. And it's very much a family-based novel. It's a restaurant-based novel for sure, and a family-based novel. There's not very many novels out there that are about restaurants, that are based at restaurants. You see them about law firms and renegade lawyers and detective agencies. And, there's certain venues or they're about governments and espionage, spy agencies. But I challenge you to find novels that are based at restaurants. And I think food and restaurants is a great topic, because there's something everybody has in common. Everybody likes food or loves food. And if you don't, and it's just a necessity of life, you've got to eat. We need nutrition. We need to fortify our bodies. And most of us love a good restaurant. Most of us probably love Italian food. And the idea of being on location at a restaurant with a dysfunctional family, again, it's largely based on my family, but of course there's a bunch of, the content is really made up stories or deflections off of real stories, and the characters are caricatures. Hopefully people get a lot of laughter out of it because it is a comedic novel, but it's also a whodunit, which is not normally what I would read or not normally what I would write. And it does have a definitive ending. You find out who did it. Essentially, in essence, it's about the secret family recipes from the old world, the Abruzzo province of Italy. And those family secrets are on laminated parchment, written in Italian, also translated into English. And they go missing one evening from a safe, no less, in the restaurant's office. And suspicion immediately falls on fellow family members. So the hunt is on, and a member of the local police department kind of goes off the books to investigate this one, gets into a sexual affair with one of the main character's sisters. The main character doesn't feel like this detective is going to do this. This detective with the police department is going to really do what's necessary. And now he's involved with his sister and all that. So he hires a private investigator, guy who's an alcoholic, a former cop himself, who got booted off the police department because he was so rough and tumble. You can imagine how bad a cop has to be to actually get thrown off the force. That's this guy named Wes Fitzgerald. And the local police department, the local police department detective is a dude named Clyde Jablonski. Mostly spends his time just trying to be cool. Likes the badge and the gun and the overcoat. Hey, it's winter in upstate New York. That's where the restaurant's located. But this restaurant's got such a reputation that people from New York City will make pilgrimages up there to try the food because it's quite celebrated. I mean, my uncle opened this joint in 1946 after he was in the army, where he was, as he said, a crackerjack baker. And then he opens an Italian restaurant in upstate New York. I won't say the town, but it's in the book when it publishes. And of course, I will give you a major heads up when it's published, because I want you all to scramble to buy it, of course. And that restaurant, he spends his whole career with the restaurant, does fabulously well, and then one day he has to retire. He probably would have kept going, but then came down with a gout, like a lot of old Italian men do, or women for that matter. I think maybe more so men. Has to retire, and the restaurant is needs to go to somebody. And there's a story behind that. It ends up going with one of the in the hands of Vinnie Marciano, our protagonist, and first person narration from his brother Mickey Marciano. And so on. He's got three sisters in the joint. His parents are in the joint. Uncle's still around, trying to make sure his legacy is being protected. The legacy is not being protected when secret recipes go missing. Of course, Vinny tries to keep that a secret from his uncle, Uncle Nunzio, and so on. It goes on from there. So this one's been sitting. And I've been thinking about getting it back out there and trying to get another agent. Over time, I've sent it out to this and that agent, hoping to garner some interest. Like, for instance, an agent says, who's representing a book that is similar in that it's about maybe an Italian family, or it's about food and restaurants, that something that would really work, shows an interest in that sort of thing. So, you put it out there and you see what you might be able to get to happen. If it doesn't happen, eventually maybe you succumb to the whole self-publishing thing. The good news is a lot of good work gets out there through self-publishing, and a lot of bad work too. Bad news is that the market's flooded with, what, 1 million books a year in the United States alone. We have, what, 330 million people in this country. What percentage of those are readers? Now, just mark off children right off the bat. Lots of adults don't read. I don't mean they can't read, I mean they just choose not to read. And those who read, a lot of them read nonfiction only. It's got to be true. Well, even fiction is true. It's true in its own way. And there's a lot of people who live in oppressive societies and totalitarian societies who write fiction because they're telling the truths of what's going on there through fiction. And the censors or the governments in those places, the dictators, are too stupid to really know what's being said anyway. They don't understand representational language or characterization or any of that stuff. They're too busy watching their back to try to make sure nobody's going to stick a knife in it and take their seat of power. What a life. But in a way, Vinny's in that situation because he's got dominion over this restaurant that churns out a fortune in cash and big time reputation. And now he's worried about retaining control because Uncle Nunzio's saying those recipes better be found. They better be returned, or the provision I made in the agreement to hand the restaurant off to you says clearly any abrogation of the restaurant's quality and the abrogation of this agreement are grounds for me taking the restaurant back. Ultimately, you got to figure Uncle Nunzio is still in charge. He still owns it. It's practically on loan to his nephew, who's too busy being a playboy. That's the thing about Vinny. He loves the limelight. He loves the money. He loves being a playboy. And it turns out he's kind of supernaturally endowed, you might say. And that works in his favor for that purpose. So that's the struggle between traditional publishing and self-publishing. I'm sure that all of us want the acknowledgement, want the cachet that comes with being published in the traditional route. Having an agent just light up to what we've written and being able to, in turn, take it to a publishing house editor who is exhilarated by the copy and convinces his or her colleagues that this thing needs to see prime time. We need to get behind this book. We need to publish it. I mean, what can be finer than that for a writer? Well, there's one thing that could be finer, and that's that the book sells fabulously well. And rather than that miserly royalty that you get off each sale of even a hardcover book, becomes something much grander than that, like the big payment up front, the big advance against royalties. I remember, and I'll close with this, when Sidney Sheldon was given a, and this was years ago when $2 million meant a lot more than it does today. He said that he told his publishing house that his novel, or actually the publishing house asked him, what is your next novel going to be about? They said I gave them three words: female con artist. And he was given a $2 million advance to go ahead and complete it. Of course, they knew that Sidney Sheldon, everything he wrote turned to gold. It was he had a fan base, a big fan base. And as soon as he published, there were hundreds of thousands of people grabbing copies of it, and ultimately millions would end up reading it. So whatever Sidney had to say about this is what my next novel is about, it's pretty much immaterial. What was material was that he had a big fan base who was going to read anything he wrote, and he consistently delivered the kind of story that they cherished. Sidney Sheldon, by the way, is a guy who created I Dream of Jeannie, the TV show. As some of you are probably too young to remember Barbara Eden and what's his name? He was J.R. Ewing, Larry Hagman. And he created other things. I mean, he was a TV mogul, but he wanted to write novels. And never a great writer, but he was a storyteller, and his prose were always interesting. Always interesting. So I read Rage of Angels, and I read The Other Side of Midnight. And if you want to read a good Sidney Sheldon book, the one I recommend, because some of them, like Master of the Game, and some fly along. I mean, literally a generation will go by in a few pages. So it's just way too fast paced. It just dispenses with an entire generation in a single chapter or a few pages. That is not the case with The Other Side of Midnight or with Rage of Angels. Those are contained stories, and the story is developed along the way. But The Other Side of Midnight is a well-written, colorful novel that I think you would enjoy. The thing I will say about Sidney Sheldon books is that they're energetic. I do like energetic writing. I try to keep my writing energetic because I want to keep people engaged. And, people will read to fall asleep. Why do they do that? They do that because most writing is energetic. I would like to ideally be writing stuff that's so energetic that people, it's like taking a caffeine pill or sipping a cup of coffee. It energizes them. It doesn't put them to sleep. Sidney Sheldon, I think, achieves that, even though his writing isn't always the greatest. But The Other Side of Midnight, bingo. As always, good luck with your own writing and your reading. Read great stuff, write great stuff. This is Mike Consulford, Novelist Spotlight. Ciao for now.